Watson Clinic is a physician-owned, multi-specialty clinic with over 350 physicians and providers, more than 40 medical and surgical specialties, and multiple locations across Polk, Pasco, and Hillsborough counties in Central Florida. For more information, visit watsonclinic.com. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Watson Clinic Health Talk. I'm your host, Jamie Duvall, a content strategist in the Watson Clinic Marketing Communications and Media Relations Department. On this episode, we're speaking with Dr. Elizabeth George. She's an optometry specialist at our Watson Clinic main location at 1600 Lakeland Hills Boulevard in Lakeland. Her areas of expertise include comprehensive eye exams and the diagnosis and treatment of a variety of common eye conditions, including glaucoma, macular degeneration, and dry eye syndrome. She's here with us to discuss all of this and much more.
Happy to be here.
I know it varies depending on what a patient is dealing with in terms of their particular eye conditions, but in a general sense, what are the recommendations for how often a patient should get a routine eye exam?
So for most people, all people, we usually recommend a yearly, just annual eye exam. I would say the only time that's different is for patients who have some sort of eye condition. We see them more often than that. And then usually for like young kids where their vision is pretty stable, they're not having any problems like every other year. But generally, I would say annually, once a year for most people.
So for those of listeners out there who haven't had an eye exam in their life, what can they expect when they go get one?
So it's not scary, I promise. Usually a comprehensive eye exam does include dilation of the eyes. So we put eye drops in the eyes that make the pupil larger so that the eye doctor can examine the back of the eye thoroughly. Usually we check vision. There's a few just kind of screening tests we do to make sure the eye muscles work correctly, the peripheral vision is intact. We check the structures of the eye, both the front and the back. And then most often or not, we check for glasses also, like a glasses prescription to see if that would benefit the patient's vision.
Well, here's the most pressing question that I know everyone out there wants to know who's been through this. What is the deal with the contraption that blows the air in your eye? What is going on with that?
Everyone's favorite. So that actually is one of the tools we have to check eye pressure. It's not everyone's favorite, and it's actually not the most accurate tool we have. So we actually in our clinic don't utilize that tool, if at all. We use other tools, but yeah, that's what the air puff is for.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's in no way painful. But it's always surprising, no matter how much you're expecting it.
Yeah, we get asked that on the daily basis of if the air puff's coming. So,
so we have two departments that deal with eye health. We have optometry, and we have ophthalmology. What are the differences between those two departments? We have multiple specialists that work in both, and how do the two departments collaborate together for patient care?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is a lot of overlap in the two professions. They're both considered eye doctors. An ophthalmologist goes to medical school, and so they learn a lot more about the body in general. Their first 4 years of school is focused on the entire body, so the whole healthcare system. And then they choose to specialize in the eye and eye surgery. So the following training after that is focused on the eye. They learn about surgeries of the eye, and then they can specialize even further to which part of the eye they want to have surgery or they want to specialize in for surgery. Optometry, they go to optometry school. That's 4 years as well, but it's all focused on the eye. So there's definitely a lot of, you know, integrative information about medicines and the body in general, but I would say the focus is all on the eye for those 4 years. So there is overlap as far as practice. Ophthalmologists are surgeons, optometrists are not. They both see the same conditions. Of course, if you have a specialist, they see certain special, you know, they have their focus on certain eye diseases. But I would say general treatment and management is about the same.
Okay.
Clinically speaking.
So, for instance, if you see a patient and they present with, I don't know, maybe cataracts or something, you can help diagnose that. You might be able to help continue the management of that condition, whatever they're dealing with. But if they require surgical intervention, then it's an easy referral to the ophthalmology department.
Definitely. Yeah. So the, we both can examine and diagnose cataracts, as if they need cataract surgery, that's where an ophthalmologist will come in, but both of us could do that general exam to kind of determine that the patient does have cataracts and that's the issue.
You know, we also have an in-house optical shop. Mm-hmm. So when you provide them with a patient with a prescription for eyeglasses or contacts, they can just step right outside your office and the eyeglass store is right there.
Yeah, yeah. So the Bridges Optical, Mark Bridges, he's the owner. He's wonderful. He helps us out a lot with our patients and glasses and adjustments and different things. So it's definitely very convenient. They can just take their prescription and just walk out the door and they don't necessarily need an appointment. They can just walk in and be helped. So
yeah, it's very, great. Very easy. Yeah. So you mentioned the collaborating with the ophthalmologists. Are there other specialties throughout the clinic that you get referrals from?
That's one of the parts I love about Watson Clinic is the collaboration and the kind of co-management of patients. So I have access to all of their medicines, any kind of other health problems that they have, because those things actually are related to the eyes oftentimes. So primary care doctors, we definitely get a lot of referrals from them just for, you know, patients. They may have some sort of eye complaint when they see their primary doctor. And so that's kind of where the referral comes in, or the primary care doctor notices something in the patient's eyes or vision or something that had changed and recommend an eye exam. That's kind of more specifically for like diabetics or patients taking certain medications. And then the other main specialty I would say is rheumatology. We get a decent amount of referrals for patients who are on Plaquenil. It's a certain medication that can affect the eyes. So we get a lot of referrals. I think it's because we're on the same floor as them. We get a ton of referrals from rheumatology.
I mean, it's great that we have 40 specialties that we can collaborate with, so any of the patient's needs under one roof can be satisfied.
Right.
But in terms of these different specialists you might collaborate with, are there common conditions, chronic conditions that might lead to vision loss? So it's good to get an optometrist in there to intervene early?
Yeah. Two examples, like I mentioned, diabetes is one of them. People don't realize how much your blood sugar plays a role in your body in general, but also with the eyes. I've seen plenty of patients where their blood sugar is out of control, and you can even go blind actually from just sugars being out of control. So there's a lot of ways it affects the eyes, but that's one example. The other one, the Plaquenil, there's plenty of patients who are on that medicine specifically for like arthritis, and that medicine can cause permanent damage to the eye, specifically the back of the eye. Once those changes happen to the vision, we can't do anything about it. So that's why we're really proactive about patients that are on that medicine having an annual exam.
Is that what's known as diabetic retinopathy?
Yeah, diabetic retinopathy is one of the ways that diabetes can affect the eyes. Basically, in the back of the eye, the blood vessels that are back there that feed and nourish the eye get kind of weak and leaky. And so blood, fluid can leak from those vessels and cause, that's what we call retinopathy. When we look in the back of the eye, we see specks of blood, specks of fluid, and that can cause swelling and ultimately lead to a lot of vision problems that may or may not be reversible. So, yeah.
But if it is treatable, what are the interventions that might happen?
So that's usually where we send to a specialist. We call it a retina specialist. That's the back of the eye. It depends kind of what the issue is, but they can do an injection in the eye, which sounds scarier than it is, but they basically inject medicine into the eye to help any kind of swelling kind of resolve. Sometimes they just watch it and monitor. Sometimes just the sugars alone being controlled, those issues will resolve on their own. But that's typically where we manage with a specialist.
Well, we talked about chronic conditions that might affect vision. How about just everyday activities? Are there tips that you have for adjustments we can make to protect our vision?
I would say the main one that anybody can really do is just protecting the eyes from the sun, just UV protection. So a good pair of sunglasses, usually polarized, is about the best you can get. Wearing those, especially in Florida when it's really, really sunny and when you're outside, just to protect the eyes from the sun.
So let's talk about computer use. Because I remember as a kid, my parents used to tell me, don't sit too close to the TV. Right. You'll hurt your eyes. But now every day, all of us have our faces in our phones and right. our computers at work. What are the dangers of that?
Yeah, so I talk to my patients a lot about this. There's two main things that can happen with kind of increased screen time, whether that's a computer, an iPad, a phone, a TV, whatever it may be. So the first thing, the focusing system of the eye, it works really hard when we're looking at anything up close, even a book. I kind of use the analogy of if you were to have like weights, if you were lifting weights and you were holding on to weights all day long, by the end of the day, your arms would just be really, really tired because you've been holding weights all day. The same with the focusing system. The eye muscles are almost contracted and working hard when you're looking at something up close. And so that system can tire out and kind of get weary towards the end of the day, especially people who work on the computer kind of 8 hours a day. You're locked in on a screen, not taking breaks. That focusing system can almost get stuck in that position. And you look up from the computer screen and everything's blurry because your focusing system was trying to keep everything nice and clear and focused up close. So that's kind of one thing. The focusing system of the eye just needs a break. It needs to kind of have that flexibility and not be stuck on a screen. The other thing is the eyes can definitely dry out. We don't blink as much when we're on a screen. And so that not blinking makes the tear glands actually clog up in the eyelid. And so over time, that can cause the surface of the eye to just get really irritated and dry. And people will have symptoms of burning, tearing, just irritation, grittiness, things like that. So that in combination with just tired eyes from the focusing system, it can kind of compound on itself and be tough to deal with.
Yeah, so. I've noticed that I have to consciously make a note to myself to take a break from the screen every 2 hours or so because I notice that I don't blink.
Yeah.
My attention is so right. intense on what's on the screen that I forget to blink.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of hard to, unless you're aware of it, you don't really notice it when you're just kind of staring at the screen and not blinking, so... Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the chronic conditions that you treat. What are they? How are they detected? What treatments are available for them? That sort of thing. The symptoms of them.
Yeah.
Let's start with glaucoma.
Okay. So I definitely have a good amount of patients that have glaucoma or are considered like a glaucoma suspect. So they have some of the risk factors for glaucoma, but they don't necessarily have true glaucoma yet. So we're trying to see if there's changes over time and prevent any changes if we see any. Glaucoma, basically, it's an eye disease. There's still some parts we don't know about it. There is a genetic component more often than not. But basically what happens, your eye pressure is too high for your eye to handle. And that puts pressure and damages your optic nerve, which is in the back of the eye, over time. And so it takes many, many years to actually lose vision from glaucoma. So you don't really have any symptoms, actually, initially. You only really notice and have those symptoms when you've lost a lot of vision. So in glaucoma patients, they lose their peripheral vision first. And so that's why it can often, patients don't have any symptoms of it because you're losing your really far peripheral vision. You may not notice that until you've lost a good amount of your peripheral vision. So thankfully, it's a disease that's treatable. Or at least we can slow down the progression a whole lot with eye drops. Most of the patients that we think have glaucoma or are developing glaucoma, we put them on these eye drops that lower their eye pressure, take some of the strain and the pressure off the back of the eye. And in a lot of patients, it prevents progression or at least slows it down so that for the majority of their life, they're having good vision.
That's good. So a test, an exam can detect the presence of glaucoma many years before it even develops symptoms?
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the reasons, you know, you may not have any eye problems, but having an eye screening at least once a year can pick up on some of these early kind of changes. So a glaucoma exam definitely is a little bit more involved. There's a few other tests that we run that we don't normally run on just maybe the average person that helps us kind of track any sort of progression over time. So,
but if someone wants to know whether or not they're out of the woods with glaucoma, like if they've had relatives that have suffered from it, mm-hmm. then they should call and schedule an appointment for an exam Definitely. Specific to that condition.
Definitely. Yep. A lot of patients we see that have family history of glaucoma, oftentimes they're at least at risk for glaucoma. So it's something we definitely want to screen for.
Okay. Yeah. Dry eye syndrome.
My favorite.
What can you, is it?
Yes.
So what can you tell me about that?
Dry eye, I feel like I talk about it all day long with my patients, but I actually enjoy it because there's a lot of simple things you can do to actually really make a difference when it comes to dryness. It's something that our generation, our population is dealing with. Pretty much everybody deals with it in some form or fashion. It's just maybe tolerance of symptoms is the difference. So dry eye, it's multifactorial. There's a lot of things that can cause dry eye, whether that's environmental, lifestyle, like we were talking about computer use, your job, your occupation, allergies, certain medications can dry the eyes out, etc. There's a lot of different things. So when we talk about dry eye, there's a few different glands that are actually in the eye. So there's some in the eyelid. There's a large gland that sits above kind of, or behind the brow bone kind of, that's called the lacrimal gland. So, both of those are involved in making your tears. And so it's actually quite complex. People think tears are just salty water. It's actually not. There's three layers to it. And, there's this perfect kind of system that your eye has to keep the tears on your eye long enough for them to actually moisturize the eye, for them to stay on your eye and not run down your cheek too fast, etc. So if any of those layers are out of balance, and all the things I mentioned before can cause those imbalances, you'll have dry eye. So it's actually a very kind of sensitive system, if you will. So for example, in your eyelid, there's what's called the meibomian glands. They're oil glands. So those glands are triggered actually by blinking. Every time you blink, those glands release a little bit of oil that coats the surface of the eye. So if you're not blinking and you're on a screen all day, those glands get clogged up. They're not working properly. And so that oil gland is really important because it helps the tears actually stay on your eye and not just evaporate. And so you may have enough tears. Your lacrimal gland that's up above your eye is producing a great amount of tears, but your oil glands aren't able to keep those tears on your eye. So you have dry eye because of that. And there's a bunch of other, you know, variations and explanations of that, but that's just one example of most people actually have some version of that kind of dryness because of screens.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Macular degeneration.
Yeah. So definitely pretty common in Caucasian older patients. Definitely if you have a family history, you're much more at risk for developing macular degeneration. And places like Florida, where there's a lot of sun exposure, that's also a risk factor as well. So macular degeneration, basically in the back of the eye, the center portion of the retina, which is the back tissue of the eye, is called the macula. That's why when you look straight ahead, everything you see is very detailed, whereas your peripheral vision is, you can see, but it's not as detailed as the center of things. The center in the back of the eye is called the macula. So that part is affected in macular degeneration. Basically, the tissue starts to degenerate. And so unfortunately, macular degeneration is one of those things we don't have a treatment, a really good treatment for. There's some things you can do preventatively, but there's a genetic component as well. So I find patients whose parents, grandparents have like a really severe form of macular degeneration, more often than not, their kids will also have it. It does develop usually later in life. So I've got a lot of patients with macular degeneration. It does seem to be a spectrum. So I've got patients who have a very mild form and it stays mild for most of their life. I've got patients that have a moderate form, it stays moderate. I've got patients that got a moderate form and it goes into the wet, more severe form, which is treatable. But once you get to that point, you've already lost a good amount of vision and we can't bring that vision back. So,
okay.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot to macular degeneration, but
are there things that you do that kind of stalls that progression. I've heard of something, a vitamin called lutein. Is that a vitamin that you guys recommend?
Yes, yeah. So that's usually what we recommend for people who have macular degeneration. There's a vitamin called AREDS. That's the brand name, AREDS. Or I guess it's the formulation is what the name is. But it basically is high-dose vitamins that support eye health. It's not necessarily a treatment, but it adds to the prevention of progression of macular degeneration. So it's not to say if you don't have macular degeneration, you take these vitamins, you won't get it. It's more people who have it, we want them to take it to hopefully prevent progression or this increase in severity.
Gotcha. So. And this is something we touched upon a little bit earlier. Cataracts,
yes. So cataracts are a little different than some of the other, like glaucoma, macular degeneration. Cataracts are technically an eye disease, but it's a normal change more than anything. It's if you live long enough, you'll develop cataracts. And so basically the lens in the eye gets foggy and cloudy. And so you start to notice those changes in your vision. I would say for most people, it starts in their late 40s. And it's very slow. It's a very slow change. You won't wake up one day and be blind from cataracts. It's really when you think back, oh, in the past 10 years, my vision is just different and it's changed. It's not as clear as it used to be type of change. So most people need cataract surgery at some point. I would say majority of my patients within their 60s and 70s, they get cataract surgery because that cloudiness starts to interfere with daily life and the things they like to do. And so that's usually when we recommend it. But
And surgery entails just replacing the lens?
Basically, yeah, they remove the cloudy lens and they put an implant in its place. And so that implant has the patient's prescription in it. And so it allows them to see clearer.
What drew you to optometry?
I wanted to do something in healthcare, but I wasn't sure which kind of specialty I wanted to do. I, of course, am familiar with optometry because I've worn glasses since I was probably 7 years old. But I did some shadowing when I was in college, and that's kind of what made the decision a little more clear for me. So I shadowed an optometrist, and it just happened to be a really great optometrist. He was very passionate and just really good at what he did. And so shadowing him, I shadowed a few others as well. It just kind of sparked my passion for it as well. And also I just was familiar with a lot of things when it comes to eyes and glasses and things. So
sure.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about what you do?
I personally love the population I see. I love seeing older patients. I don't know why, I just really enjoy that population. And like I said before, Watson Clinic, it's a perfectly well-rounded place to work from an optometry standpoint. I get to know all the patient's medical history. If I need, you know, another specialist to see my patient for whatever reason it may be. And that's happened before where, you know, I need a neurology consult like today and they're just upstairs, you know, it's a really great thing. And I don't think people realize how special that is and how helpful it is from a healthcare perspective. Even in optometry, there's even cases of like in more emergent situations where I need to contact the PCP. I need to send them to the emergency room, which is surprising. We didn't really talk too much about that, but there are actually a few eye conditions that are considered an emergency. And so sending patients to the ER, having that kind of access, whereas some optometry offices are kind of solo. They don't really have that connection to other specialists, other facilities, things like that, or even labs. If there's certain labs I need to run, if there's an MRI that I need to run, those kind of things, that it's just a really, really great thing. And it makes my job so much easier. And I get to see a lot of really cool patients because of that.
Yeah. So now that you brought it up, you have to tell me what are the eye conditions that require emergency treatment?
Oh no. So, there's a few, but I'll just give an example. So, I actually had a patient recently who, came in with complaints of vision issues. And we ran a test called a visual field test. And so that shows us kind of your peripheral vision. This specific patient was complaining, I feel like I've lost some of my vision. And so, you know, people come in thinking there's something wrong with my eyes, right? And so we ran this visual field test and it showed certain pattern of defect. So basically the left side of this patient's vision was completely gone in both eyes, like completely the hemispheres of both eyes completely gone. And so when we see that, it's a sign of a stroke most likely. And so, you know, sometimes patients don't realize that it's actually a brain issue, not actually an eye issue. The brain issue affected the eyes. And so that's why you're having symptoms in the eyes, but it's actually not really an eye issue. And so for a patient like that who doesn't know that they've had a stroke, immediately they need to go get a workup for a stroke. And so that's happened where you need to go to the emergency room. Thankfully, it's right next door for us. And go see what's going on, because it's actually not an eye issue. So I've had the opposite happen as well, where a patient already knows they had a stroke and then they come in saying that they've had vision issues. We run the same test and see the same thing. And so it's really interesting.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today and talking to us about all of this, Dr. George. Thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks, Jamie.
That's it for this episode of Watson Clinic Health Talk. For more information on Watson Clinic's optometry department, visit watsonclinic.com/optometry. And to schedule an appointment with Dr. George, call 863-680-7486 or visit watsonclinic.com/George. Be sure you subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review. Till next time, thanks for listening.